And if you look at any hero in the Bible, you look at any of the heroes in Marvel, all of them, when they get into that intimate space of the hero, of those that people look up to, there's a flaw. And the flaw isn't actually meant for you to feel less than, it's just meant to keep you humble.
Welcome on in. Welcome on in to the Leadership Podcast. The Leadership Podcast is where we will explore transformational power of personal leadership. We're going to deep dive into conversation with influential leaders, experts, and change makers who are reshaping the way we lead and inspire others. Our goal here on the Leadership Podcast is simply to influence, inspire, and empower men to make the shift in their personal leadership by becoming the best version of themselves. We will share tools, tips, and resources to ignite self-awareness and authenticity. It's all about helping men become more effective and impactful in their leadership. Get ready. The shift is about to take place. It's the Leadership Podcast with Dwayne Roberts. What's happening? Phenomenal day to you. Welcome on in to the Leadership Podcast. I'm your boy, Dwayne Roberts. How's everybody doing? Listen, man, I'm so glad to be here with you today. Welcome on in. Before we get into today's episode, man, let me do a little housekeeping. I want to invite you fellas out to the 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth, a mastermind. That's right. Taking place April 4th, 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Looking at the John Maxwell book, where we will pull from it four principles so we can grow and develop into the person that we desire to be. It's the 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth Mastermind. You can register for this free event by heading over to the webpage, DwayneHRoberts.com now. Also, fellas, well, we are now open for new membership. I'm talking about the leadership community. That's right. I believe that men need a safe place where they can share their thoughts. They can talk. I think men need other like-minded men to help them grow and thrive in today's challenging environments. I believe that men need feedback to life's unanswered questions. They need support to help them navigate those tough spaces. If you're a man and you're saying, you know what? I can use that. I'm looking for a community of like-minded men where I can grow and develop myself. Well, then guess what? The leadership community might just be for you. You can head over to the webpage, DwayneHRoberts.com. There you can learn more about the leadership community, as well as register for the 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth Mastermind. Lastly, before we get this thing kicked off, I want to send a special shout out to our new subscribers and leadership community members. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I got to admit, we couldn't do this without you. It's your support, your commitment to growth and excellence that we're able to do what we do. If you haven't subscribed to the Leadership Podcast, I want to encourage you, wherever you listen to podcasts, listen, please subscribe today. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, as well as YouTube. We love to connect with you. So here we go, guys. You guys ready to get this thing started? Man, on today's episode of the Leadership Podcast, we are talking with Aaron Thomason. Aaron, born and raised in Detroit, brings a unique perspective on adapting to your environment and overcoming life's challenges. His journey from the vibrant streets of Detroit to becoming a beacon of guidance for leaders across the globe is nothing short of inspirational. He is a distinguished leadership coach, certified in organizational change and change management. He's also a college basketball Hall of Fame. I'm curious to know more. Fellas, family, help me give a warm virtual welcome to my man, Aaron Thomason. What's happening, Aaron?
Take that intro. You got me feeling all warm and fuzzy over here, man. Like I might be somebody. Jesse told us we were somebody. So you got me feeling good there, sir. What's up, man?
I'm good, brother, man. I'm so glad to have you here with us, rocking with us today, man. We truly appreciate it, man.
That's what's up. Like I said to you earlier, I wish I'd have got the memo for that time, bro. I would have put one up.
As they say at church, you come as you are, baby. It's the content we get ready to have a good time with. That's all it is.
No doubt. So listen, Aaron, introduce yourself to the fellas. Let them know who Aaron Thomason is and how you desire to serve, my friend.
Yeah. So, man, I to keep it super simple and not give you the long drawn out version, but Aaron Thomason, I am a kid born and raised in Detroit, Michigan. And, you know, some of the stuff you hear about Detroit is true. Some of it ain't. But I wouldn't suggest you try me. Don't let this tie or this smile fool you, okay? We had to survive in the 80s and the 90s when stuff was going crazy. But, you know, in the midst of all of that, God was gracious. Both my parents were preachers. And so being the oldest of three, you know, you kind of got a chance to be a little weird because you were always in church when everybody else was playing. But in that transition, my parents also figured out how to give us a different balance, which I think gives me the ability to be relatable, is being able to start playing sports. So it was baseball at first. It finally got into basketball. I hated it growing up because I was so tall and people wanted me to play basketball. So it was baseball and, you know, running track and all those different things in the neighborhood. And then, you know, at about the age of 15, you know, after my parents separated and were divorced and, you know, that mental paradigm I'm processing through, then, you know, my mother, who was a probation officer at the time, she got shot on the job. And so now father's not in the home based on them separating. Now I got to step into some shoes that I wasn't necessarily meant for, but by God's grace was able to navigate it. You know, my mother recently just celebrated her 71st birthday. So by God's grace, she made it through it. But you don't know as you're going through it that it's going to be what you're going through. And yeah. So I left there, played basketball at Oregon State University for a year, transferred to a little school in Valparaiso, Indiana, called Valparaiso University. And this time in which we're recording it is around that March Madness time. It's, for me, it's better than Christmas. Having a chance to have played in this thing, played in the tournament three times, qualified for four, it's an amazing time. But in that kind of journey, for me, I kind of started developing this knack for leadership. As the oldest, you're the experimental kid. Any of my brothers who are out here that are the oldest, you don't get away with stuff that everybody else does. They tell you if somebody else ends up hurt, it's your fault. Like, it's all that weird stuff. So the accountability, the responsibility for me happened at a very early age. And as we were more popular in college and as these things start happening, it wasn't just my height and my physical presence that was stepping into the leadership space. It was now how I saw the world, the responsibility that I felt to be able to serve others. And it continued to transition from there. And so just speeding ahead, you get to the pandemic where, you know, I moved from my hometown in Detroit down to Nashville. And now the pandemic happens. And so being a former praise and worship leader and being a youth minister, there was a part of me that was still trying to figure out my identity and my voice. And so just made a decision in 2020 after kind of through some searching and journaling and talking to some people. Hey, you need to start showing up online and start doing the stuff that you have been doing locally since 2000 from an official business perspective and start seeing what this digital world was about. And so, you know, over the time, just evolving, it's really figuring out that the group that responds to me are people that are ultimately overthinkers. Now, overthinkers can come in all different sizes and shapes. You can be a professional, an entrepreneur. And those are the spaces where a lot of people really come to me that they have brilliant ideas in their mind, but they don't know where to start. And then they're also fearful of making a mistake. And so God has just given me this gift to be able to kind of jump in your head, separate some things, and let's start talking through a systematic process in which we're going to help build clarity and confidence that gives you the ability to actually have sustainable momentum for maximizing your profit, your performance, and your productivity. So, man, that's just a quick rundown. I feel like I said a whole bunch, but let me stop. Dwayne, back to you.
That's what's up, my brother. No, it's good. It's good that you gave everybody a well-rounded view about who you are. Sometimes most people don't want to share so much. So I truly appreciate that piece of authenticity and transparency in sharing. Here's something you said, though. You said, don't let the tie fool you. You know, I've been catching this series on stars and they go back. Let me see if you're familiar with the BMF.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
If you want to know about Detroit in that time period, that they are very true to how things work. Keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was some of my thought process, right? You grew up in that time era. How did that affect you? I know you mentioned that you was a PK kid, so am I, but how did you navigate that space? What kept you from acting in that type of activity, or did you splurge? What were some of the challenges for you navigating that space during that time, brother?
Yeah, so great question. So it's interesting, like if people who have watched the BMF series, if you go back to like the first season and some of the geographic areas they're talking about, literally like my middle school was in some of those spaces, like it literally was like right around the corner, some of the stuff that they're talking about. And so just so knowing that, you don't get a chance to operate in Detroit at that time in a vacuum where school is going to be super safe, but the drugs and all that stuff is happening out there. It's like, no, that stuff was seeping in. And so there was this one school, it's no longer open, called Lessinger Middle School. And I was about 11 when we had to first kind of started going to public school because my parents had us in this small Christian school for a while. And I tell people during that time period, I really felt like I was an intelligent hoodlum. I really felt like it because it was the only way I could survive. My grades were fantastic, but I was fighting all the time because as a taller kid, and I was normally the tallest person, let alone kid, in every building I was in growing up. So, you know, dudes, they got the Napoleon complex, you know, they got the testosterone flying. Everybody want to get their rap on the big dude. So, you know, the legend of happy man, I chumped this big dude. I punked him, man. You know, that dude was 7'12". Like, hold on, man. I'm 11 years old. I might have been 5'10". Like easy on the exaggeration, but that's part of what happens with boys in the testosterone is they want something to conquer. They want to battle the fight. And at times I was the one to fight. My clothes didn't fit. I wasn't in the in crowd. I was taller than everybody else and I had good grades. So understand, I had to learn how to use these, or if people didn't want to fight, I had to learn how to use my mouth because, you know, doing the dozens and we circling around. One thing I can tell you, I'm not going to get embarrassed in front of the cute girl more than one time. So that's how I got quick with it. With being able to say stuff back to people in the moment, wasn't always the nicest about it, but I literally was trying to survive. I think the other thing that getting through that time period that was good is my mother was a probation officer. And my mother was no nonsense because what she was telling us that I got later is that her two boys, there's three of us, it's me, my brother, my sister. She said, my two sons look like these clients that sit in front of me every day. Mm-hmm. And I refuse to allow for my sons to be one of my clients one day. So my mother was great. Like I tell people, I'm a horrible liar. If you ask me the right question, you're going to find out everything you want to know because integrity was always important to her. And she really was that parent that meant it. If you tell me the truth, it's going to be less than it would be if I got to find out that you lying. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, again, being a PK, being weird, then I had to learn, had to develop some skills. The environment taught me some skills. So it was quick with the tongue, nice with the hands. And then also having a mother who prayed, but also was like, no, this could mean your life. I think those things kind of kept me out of the nonsense.
Is that where you found this lane of love for baseball, basketball, things of that nature too?
Oh, man, loved it. So my parents were still together at the time, and my dad was a baseball guy. You know, like he'd tell you everything about baseball, you know, the old Tiger Stadium or Michigan and Trumbull, about when they won the World Series and, you know, with Willie Burton and Al Kaline in 68. Like he would tell all those amazing stories. So me and my brother grew up playing baseball. Like I primarily was a baseball player until I was 14. And so it was really a different environment where I remember some of my friends who were in church, their parents believed the scripture that, you know, physical activity profited the body nothing. So they wouldn't let their kids participate. My parents were really cool about, hey, if this is what you want to do, so you're going to have the commitment, because there were years I wanted to quit because it wasn't going well. They said, no, you're not going to quit because your team is dependent on you. Now, at the end of the season, if you don't want to come back, that's cool. But we're not going to let you quit in the middle of the season. And so, like, those things for me were super cool because I wanted to be, I'm competitive, so I wanted to get better in the sport. So any of my idle time, we'd go down the street to the little park and we'd be, you know, playing sandlot baseball, trying to get better or, you know, do chores around the house. House to be able to get money to go to the batting cage. So it really was about being better in that craft. So it gave me a nice distraction that as I got older, when we moved to the other side of town, there was some dudes on my street that we knew they were selling drugs. We knew dude was cool. And they realized that I was going down a different path. And they said, you know something? If anybody mess with you, you tell them, you let me know, I'll take care of it. So that's when you knew back then growing up that you were doing something positive when the dudes who weren't doing something positive wanted to make sure you stayed on the right track.
So many men, young men get trapped up in this monkey see, monkey do. I was one of those guys. I followed the crowd, bro. I'm just going to be real. If the crowd said it was good to do, then you can best believe I was probably in it. You know, wasn't the best outcomes, but to that point, having something else that you were great at, something else that really caught your focus and your attention. Can you share with me a childhood story, brother? Share with me a childhood story coming up out of Detroit where you just realized, you know what? Yeah, this is for me. This is where I want to go.
Yeah, so one of the ones that I think for me, I remember, I'll speed ahead. I'll go to my senior year in high school. And in Detroit, you know, my school was kind of the nerdy school, but we were getting better in athletics. And then there was a super, super hood school that was a rival of ours. And their star player ended up playing in the NBA, played with LeBron James and some other folks named Robert Tractor Trailer. And he and I ultimately became really good friends and teammates in the summer leagues later. But at the time, we just didn't like each other. Now, at the time, I'm maybe 6'6", 6'7", 100 pounds soaking wet. Track is about three feet easy. And so I can't go pound to pound with this dude. That's impossible. That is a exercise in futility. And I remember we had to play them for the last game of the season. And if we beat them, we would go undefeated for the year and have like a number one seed in the city playoffs. And also if we beat them, we would disrupt or kill any chance they had to get into the city playoffs. So we were really excited about that. We could be undefeated, and we do it to them, and it was actually on their home floor. So, you know, I had one of my best games in high school, you know, ended up with a double-double. You know, a lot of dudes I played with ended up going Division I. So it was like 14 points, maybe 13 rebounds, maybe about four or five blocks. Had a really good game. And so as it does, they want to come talk to you. And when they came to talk to me at the end of the game, the local paper said, hey, so Aaron, so what was it about today, about playing against Tractor Trailer? And he ultimately was Mr. Basketball. He was a McDonald's All-American. He was a top 10 NBA draft pick. So the kid can play. Like, this dude can play. And they just asked me, what was it? Because I wasn't on anybody's radar at that point. And I said, you either step up and play strong or you roll over and play dead. I don't know where this 17-year-old kid got that from. I'm just going to be honest. It was a heck of a quote. But that's the way I was going in. It's like, either I'm going to get embarrassed or it's going to be something special that I'm going to be able to talk about later. And that's where I started learning early, because being such a nice church kid, I didn't really have that edge, you know, used to getting picked on and only was doing it out of survival. I remember my coaches used to tell me, hey, being nice on the court doesn't help you accomplish the goal that you're in. And I used to get that. Then somebody also told me, hey, what you've been given for you not to play hard, for you not to play aggressive and not to use your talents is an opportunity where you're not glorifying God and thanking him for what you have. So you start putting those two pieces together where it's, I don't have to be nice because within the rules of the game, this is how we play. And two, if I play that like I'm supposed to, this is giving God glory for what he gave me. That's when some of that stuff started clicking. And I think that's where that quote came from.
Man, give me that quote once more. That was good, though.
Hey, you either step up and play hard or you're going to roll over and play dead.
Man, step up and play hard or you're going to roll over and play dead. This sound like this is this place for you that, hey, hold on. I got to give my all to something. This is a play. You said it. I can't play small on the court. I got to step up. Help. How did that help you, your team, navigate that space? You playing stronger. What were some of the outcomes because you took on this to heart and you played for the glory of God? Let me just say it that way. I think that's the best way to say that.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the things I think when you're in the fight, you don't realize what the beauty of the picture that you're painting. And I remember when I had to transfer from Oregon State and I transferred to Valparaiso University, is that one of my teammates from high school said, dude, you don't understand how lucky you are. I said, what are you talking about? He says, most people, and again, now this is, you know, this is almost 30 years ago. You know, there was no transfer portal and you had to sit out a year minimally. And normally, because kids didn't want to sit out, they would go Division I to Division II so they could play right away. And it was odd to go Division I to Division I back then. And so he was like, dude, people don't get this opportunity. And you just act like Division I scholarships happen all the time. Well, in my brain, I'm going, this is the goal. This is what's supposed to happen. But I remember my high school coach used to tell me, he said, Aaron, one of the things that when I talk to coaches about you, the last thing I talk to them about is your basketball game. He said, I talk to them about your family. I talk to them about your grades. I talk to them about your leadership. I talk to them about how you helped build the culture. And then I say, oh, and he happens to be a really good basketball player. So I started understanding too, and you see this in athletes, that an athlete is great on the court, great on the field, but they can't survive in life. And that's one of the things I never wanted to be. I tell people I'm a grown-up nerd. So another thing, I remember watching shows like Saved by the Bell and, you know, Happy Days as a kid, where the jocks were always dumb. And I was like, no, I'm not going to be that one. I'm going to be really good in the sport, and my grades are going to be great. And so that kid saw something he didn't want and wanted to formulate something different. And so even with that, you know, I graduated, you know, my high school graduating class was almost 700 students. I was number 7 out of, as far as GPAs, out of 700. National Honor Society. Could have went to school for academics as well as athletics, and I just chose the athletic route. So for me, when you talk about glorifying God, it's like, are you maximizing everything that you have? Mm-hmm. You know, are you giving it everything you got? And I think more of us try to make it easier on ourselves to do an or versus an and. And so for me, when you look at student athlete, that's an and. I was a really good student. I was a really good athlete. But a lot of times we like to take the pressure off ourselves and become a good student or a good athlete, or I'm a great husband, I'm a bad provider. Or I'm really good in the boardroom, but I got no time for my kids. Is that we have the opportunity, you know, with accountability, with transparency, to actually do them both and to live in the season of and as opposed to or.
So how do men survive? How do they maximize that? Because, I mean, it almost sounds second nature coming from you. I know this is time, this is training, this is learning. What do you say to the man that this place in? How do I do that? How do I make that happen in my life?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'll say the first thing I think, and still for me to this day, and my favorites, if you look at my phone, I got a group of men that I know who to call on speed dial. So I think you got to find a man. Let me say that. A man that you can be fully naked with, fully transparent with, fully vulnerable with, because there's nothing like men talking to men. And again, what happens when that becomes a woman, I'm just going to say this, fellas, when you become vulnerable or naked emotionally to a woman, that becomes attractive and arousing to her, and you will find yourself in something that you don't want to be in. So the first thing I'm going to say is you got to go find a man. Like, you got to go find a man. Again, my dad was doing this thing when my parents got divorced, so it wasn't my dad initially. Even though before he passed away, we ended up having a really cool relationship. And it wasn't necessarily my pastor at my church. It ended up being my uncle, who he and I are pretty tight to this day. That was a space where I could be super transparent. Then one of my teammates' dads, who really brought me into his fold as if I was another son of his, I could be transparent with growing up. Then if I look at, you know, even my high school coach, like, I could do that. Like, there were those growing up. And then I started looking for that same space when you move into Oregon, living in Indiana. Where are these relationships still? And one of my friends just had a birthday yesterday, and I just sent him a text message as opposed to calling him, just outlining, like, dude, I'm not who I am without you because of your inspiration. This is a dude that, you know, had been married over 20 years, has 6 daughters. He's made some mistakes, but he's never held back, even from the very moment in which we met each other, about encouraging, inspiring me to do the work so I could live healthy, happy, and whole. So I would tell you, the first thing for any man saying, hey man, I need that, I promise you there's one. There's usually one. Now, we might not want it to be that one. We might not even like that one. But you got one person, one man that you can be transparent with, that you can be vulnerable with, that I promise that's going to help you be able to process and take some of that stress and that weight off your shoulders. Because you're right, Dwayne, a lot of men, we are just surviving.
Find that man, find that one man, being vulnerable and be willing to be transparent. So rich, man. That's so rich. So you answered this, and it was one of my questions, and I wanted to know I know you mentioned the divorce in your family. And what was some of that? What was that relationship like with your dad? And how did you navigate that space?
Yeah. So for me, it was tough because, you know, I remember hearing some stories with, you know, I remember being in school. Let me start there. I remember being in school and my friends, you know, their parents didn't have their dads or their moms didn't have the same last name. And I'm like, that's weird, because all I knew was 2 parents, 3 kids, same last name, same mama, same daddy. That's what we do. And I remember one time I might have been maybe the 8th grade, maybe the 9th grade. And I remember praying or saying out loud, but I remember this was an audible conversation I was having with myself where I said, man, I'm so glad my family's together and all of our names match. It was something, just innocence of a kid. And then about 2 years later, my parents got divorced. And so part of what was tough about my parents getting divorced is because it wasn't as if the relationship just dissipated. It was my dad left my mom for another woman. Just Those are real. And so now my hero, like I can say that my dad growing up until I was 15 and they left, he was my hero. Like I played baseball because of him. Like I looked up to him to the point that he played on the softball team through his job. I thought he played for the Tigers. Like this is all the delusion of a kid. Like when I drive, I turn the wheel like he does. There's certain ways that I laugh that are like his. Like, and if you look at pictures of him and I next to each other, I look like him. That is like that dude was my hero. And so then when I look at all the things that he had taught us, and I wasn't looking at him from a human lens, you know, kids have a tendency not to look at their parents through a human lens. They look at them as these superheroes. We put them on a pedestal. But he had the same fragility, the same insecurities, the same questions that I'm sure most of your listeners as men have. And later he admitted he didn't know how to navigate it. But when
unlock your true potential with the Leadership Community, where we empower men to embrace self-awareness and authenticity. Introducing the Leadership Community, where we believe in helping men become the best version of themselves. It all starts with self-awareness, and we encourage men to take a step back, pause, and reflect on their thoughts, emotions, and behavior. Embrace their authenticity and break free from societal expectations. Here are just a few testimonies from individuals. Leadership helped me develop self-awareness and embrace my authentic self. And now I feel more confident and fulfilled. Question, are you ready to unlock your potential? If so, join the Leadership Community today.
Your hero now becomes human. It shattered me. And me and my dad, from probably about 15, maybe till just before I graduated from college to about 21, 22, I was angry. Like I was polite, but I was angry. You know, I felt like I had to choose a side. I chose my mama. And so all of those different things there started coming to a point while doing the work in healing. I remember it was one of the first moments I started healing from being angry and allowing for love to transpire over the anger. Is it was my last year in college, and we used to do a basketball banquet at the end of every year. And every year I used to ask my mom, hey, do you mind if dad comes? And she was like, she was feeling the way. So I think it was 2 years I didn't even ask her. It was my last year, and I said, Mom, I would like for dad to come. Are you okay with that? She said, sure. He's like, nope, I think he should come. You know, my dad was huge into taking pictures. Man, that dude was walking around there taking pictures. You would have swore I was Dwayne The Rock Johnson or somebody. It was red carpet paparazzi. That man was taking pictures all over the place. And just the pride to see in his face that I was his son in this moment that he was enjoying. There was a part of me as a kid, you know, though I'm older now, but even 21, 22, that I felt like I had denied him these other moments, you know, and I had to process through that a little bit. But watching that pride and that excitement, I was like, you allow for anger to keep you both from this moment. And that's why, like, now I try to process through my anger, what's the root of it, and the seeds of it a lot faster, because I don't want to deny myself, because it was a beautiful moment for me to see how proud he was of me, but also it was a beautiful moment for him to be able to be proud of his son.
Man, so beautiful. Dad was the hero. I love that. I really love that statement, and watching that hero fall, how's that help you navigate this space now? Are you the hero for your kids? Do you think you're the hero for your family now? And how does what dad's shortcomings help you navigate that space as being a husband today?
Yeah, great question. I think the one thing as I got older is understanding humanity. And when you look at, especially for African-American men, but I think all men of all demographics get this, but specifically for African-American men, we have been discipled, we have been subconsciously programmed that we only have value based on what we produce. We only have value based on what we produce. What job you got, what house you got, what car you got, what clothes you got, you know, your seed, how does that produce? Your wife, what did your game produce? Like whatever it is, it's what do you produce? And thinking back on some of the stuff that I remember, it was one summer that my dad had gotten laid off from his job. And in order to provide for 3 kids and a wife, he went and was an usher at the movie theater all summer. And you don't think nothing of it as a kid. I just knew we got in the movies for free all summer. I mean, we was watching everything. Anything came out, we got to see anything. And I remember one time we went to the movies and my dad is literally tearing our tickets and giving it to us. So now as a 46 year old man, I think back and I'm going, no, there's a level of sacrifice that this man was willing to make sure we were okay. And so the level of humility that he had to have to say that and sacrifice that my family is worth more, I try to keep some of those things as an example. But as we got older and now we're having men conversations, he would just say, I could have fought harder for you, Mom. yep, I messed up and slipped over with my next wife because I was, and he'll walk me through that piece. So it's always when you begin to believe the hype, and if you look at any hero in the Bible, you look at any of the heroes in Marvel, all of them, when they get into that intimate space of the hero, of those that people look up to, there's a flaw. And the flaw isn't actually meant for you to feel less than, it's just meant to keep you humble. And so that's one of the things that through my dad's lessons and through some of my friends in my circle is that we don't point out each other's flaws to pull each other down. It's, hey, remember, that thing is still lurking. Remember, the enemy is like a roaring lion seeking out the world to who he can kill, steal, and destroy. Remember, that's always there. Sin is, like God told, you know, Cain before he killed Abel. Sin is lurking at your door, but you must what? Master it. And so when you're looking at these things, if you always keep that clear in your head that I got some shortcomings, I'm not perfect, you know, I'm not a bad dude either. I'm not all right, but I ain't all wrong. If you can start thinking through that, the humility keeps you, it's like bumpers when you're teaching a kid how to bowl. It just keeps the ball in the middle of the lane and not allowing for you to go left or right and destroy stuff.
Man, so good. I like that. Another thing you said too in this conversation was how you process anger, the seeds. Talk to me about processing anger. What helped you process anger? And what's some practical steps when it comes to processing anything in life, not just anger, but whatever distraction challenges may might be having?
Yeah, I think this is one of the things I learned when my father passed. And it's really these quick, I look back on my life and I was already doing it, but in grief, I needed a different framework. And I know God gave it to me because anybody who's lost a loved one, that thing is head trippy on you and you really trying to figure out how to get your bearings. And so the first thing I would tell people, whether you're angry, whether you're happy, sad, disappointed, confused, whatever it is, first of all, lean into it. That's the first thing you got to do is lean into it. That's what I learned with grief. If I'm sad, lean into it. Because see, especially for men, we have a tendency to ignore our emotions. Absolutely. We have a tendency to try to keep things flat. And because we don't know how to, we thwart our emotions and we blunt how we get high and we get low. And we're trying to stay here because a lot of us were athletes. And if you get too high or get too low on the court, it can cause you, or in the field, it can cost you a penalty or your team could. So we try to keep things here. If we go to the previous generation, they couldn't show emotion in public because it would get them killed. So we've been taught to be flat. So one of the things I've learned in processing any of it is lean into it. If I'm angry, lean into it. Now, that doesn't mean you go tearing up the house. That don't mean you go doing anything crazy. But leaning into it is now giving you the ability to investigate it. Lean into it. Why am I angry? What is this about? When I was grieving in some of those early grief moments, why am I sad? Because when you lean into it, it gives you the ability to understand in a way that you would not understand if you ignore it. The second thing is if you're just okay, be okay, right? And so a lot of times we don't like that polar stuff. We don't like, we either want to be happy, we want to be sad. We either want to be angry or we want to be joyful. But sometimes there are moments in the day where it's just okay, just to be okay. And accept that and enjoy that moment. Because what happens when we understand what Solomon talks about in Ecclesiastes, about there's a time and season for everything. If I'm angry, watch. If I'm angry, cool, lean into it, investigate why. If I'm happy, enjoy it, because you know the season is going to change where something could trigger you to being angry again. Or if you're just okay, be okay. So I think those things I learned through grief, and I realized through my anger, I learned that too. If I got shot with an elbow, I felt like a dude did something dirty to me on the corridor. Felt like I got done dirty in a corporate environment. Oh, I'm going to be pissed. I'm going to be frustrated. But the question is why? Was it my responsibility that I let somebody into a space that I wasn't supposed to? Did I go against what I know better on? Who am I really upset with? Like, what am I really frustrated about? Yeah. And when you lean in there, lean into it, now we can figure out, extrapolate the lessons to figure out what boundaries we need to create, what tools we need to go get, now to put ourselves in a position that now we can do what the Bible tells us, to be angry and sin not. So those are some of the things I navigate through.
Man, that's so good, brother. So good, because I agree with you. We have to learn to lean into it. Do the investigating work. Why? Ask that question. Deep dive that a little bit. I think that's one area in my life too that I'm often asking myself, whatever it might be. For me, It's not so much angry. It's more procrastination, lack of follow through. So I have to deep dive that. And what I found for myself was it was just an element of shame.
Mm.
And so shame ain't a behavior. Shame is one of those hidden emotions that lurks and peeks around. You can't figure out why you keep dropping a ball on this. And that was the thing I had to work through. Still doing a little study on that. But I appreciate you for that, brother. That was good. Here's my next question for you, my friend. I caught one of the episodes with you and our boy Tommy from Extreme Execution. You know, you was discussing adapting in your environment. Yeah, unpack that for us a little bit. What's the adapting in your environment? What's that look like? I know you shared a story or illustration, let's say, between you and your wife, conversation you guys had. I just wanted you to unpack what it looks like to be adapting in our environments.
Yeah. So one of the things, you know, Paul talks about this principle. He says, I became all things to all people that I may win souls. You know, another principle is that he who wins souls is wise. Another principle, I'm just quoting these scriptures real quick and I'm going to get to it. And then the other one is in all that getting, get an understanding. And so in all those things, it's about environmental. Jesus also taught, be wise as a serpent, but be gentle as a dove. So when you look at what is the environment cause, like we talk about it from an extreme execution perspective, is that people have an adaptive range. They have a natural range. And people, you know, now, you know, this generation, I just won't be me. I'm going to do me. And you just got to accept me and be me. And I'm like, that's cool. I'm not mad at that. But understand, some people might not want you and it could cost you something. Are you ready to pay the cost? Now, this generation might say, I'm not code switching. I'm not doing none of that stuff. Okay. So are you being authentic to the point that you're being reckless? Or is your authenticity being wise? And so when we talk about the adaptability, I first learned that lesson on the court. And I remember like my teammates used to say like, yo, you like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I said, what are you talking about? They said, man, you be on the bench with us, cracking jokes, having a good time. Coach called your name. You turn into a totally different person. I said, yeah, because the jokes on the bench are not going to get me more playing time on the court. So we got to fix that. The same way, if I'm in a corporate environment, you know, what I really feel in my head, that thank God for the prefrontal cortex of the brain that filters what comes out of my mouth, that I can say, I'm just keeping it real. I'm just telling them what they want to say. That's cool. And I actually made some of those mistakes in my career. Told them exactly what I was thinking. And what happened? It delayed my promotion. It messed with my money. And it started setting some other things back because I paid the cost of being authentic. So now people are asking, man, boy, that means you're not being real. That means you might be being fake. And I remember having this conversation with my wife. I think this is what the conversation me and Tommy had. And I remember her saying, well, you don't want to let me be me. You just want me to be what you want me to be. I said, hey, listen, I want you to be you. But sometimes I need you to be you on 7 and not on 10. Because when you on 10, being you on 10, it hurts me in a different space. I feel it different. But you on 7 is different. And so that's where you talked about earlier in the intro, the emotional intelligence. It is the self-awareness, and self-awareness encompasses the environment. And so when you can begin to start understanding your environment and what role you play in the environment, now you can regulate up or down whatever is necessary at the time. And again, it's a nuance. It's an art. It isn't black and white. And that's why a lot of people don't like to do it. They either want to go one end or the other, as opposed to doing the and is where you find that sweet harmony and you begin to start influencing and leading relationships.
So good, man. That's so good. Eloquently said too, man. I definitely eloquently said, I got to admit. Here's my next question for you. And I know personal development leadership is close to heart. And when you're thinking of personal development, components to helping developing into the best version of you.
So I'm going to go first personal development. The first thing I'm going to go with is, what are you reading? What are you listening to? Yeah, what are you reading? What are you listening to? And who are you hanging around? Those are going to be three key areas. So reading. I believe in our go, go, go society, there is beauty and brilliance in audiobooks. Let me be clear. But there's something about the transformational piece that happens when you pick that book up, you set that time aside, and you allow for it to get in you, because you're not really running and reading. You're not driving and reading. You got to lock in and give it your full attention. So I think, what are you reading? Are you just reading stuff on your social media timeline? Are you reading the gossip stuff? Are you just reading the sports pages? What are you reading? Are you reading somebody's inspirational story? For me right now, I'm reading the memoir of Coretta Scott King, which is phenomenal, by the way. And just being able to understand the nuances of human stories and origins and hearing how they overcame and all that good stuff. So what are you reading? I like to read autobiographies and memoirs, but I also like to read, you know, leadership stuff. You know, what have people researched? What have they thought? One of my favorite authors is Adam Grant. He is phenomenal in his stuff and how he walks through and breaks things down. Then it's, what are you listening to? And that goes into like music and podcasts. Those are two big categories right now. What do you listen to? Music and podcasts. Now I'm a kid again. BMF, you talked about it. That's the, you know, the height of rap and hip hop going this direction. NWA, Snoop, Death Row, Tupac. I got all that stuff. I remember very early, your boy couldn't listen to it if I needed to be calm. Because I remember one day, me and all my teammates, I learned this lesson in high school. We got our headphones on with our Discmans or our Walkmans. And we all listened to either Tupac, Biggie, or somebody. And we almost all fouled out in the first quarter. And coach made a rule. He said, hey, y'all can't listen to nothing on y'all way to the game no more. Because y'all were so amped up, y'all was going to fool around and foul out. We wasn't going to have nobody to play. So I started understanding that seriously, that music affects your mood. So what do I need to be listening to? If I need to kind of be thoughtful, sometimes I'll drive and I'll listen to just like jazz, like no words, you might watercolors on XM radio. Then it might be times where I'm in kind of that worship and praying mode. So I want some worship music. Then it might be, I could be a little tired or I'm having a good reminiscing moment. Boom, I'm going to go with the 90s R&B. I'm going to go with the hip hop, something with a little bit more drive. But what are you listening to? And that you got to be able to curate that playlist because it's affecting what goes into your mind, and melodies go deeper than words ever will. Yeah. And so we got to be mindful of that. Then we go podcast. The beauty of a podcast is somebody determined that this is my voice, this is my platform, and this is what I believe. And you got to make sure that if you're listening to podcasts, that you got to make sure that you're listening to people who align where you're trying to go. Now, it doesn't mean they always agree. That doesn't mean that they agree with everything you agree with everything they say. But there needs to be some level of alignment or directional, because taking in the wrong stuff is going to affect how you then navigate. Then the last thing is, who are you around? My circle is tight, and depending on how things go, I have developed new friends as I've gotten older, so I'm open to it, but there's a qualification of what I need in my circle. And so because I understand that qualification of what I need in my circle, then I'm cool with adding to the circle, but everybody can't get into it.
What's one qualification?
Oh, you got to be integral. You got to have integrity. Like, I mean,
that's coming from back home right there, brother.
Yeah. And again, when I'm in integrity, I'm going, Dwayne, if your wife in my presence, or I'm not around, if my wife in your presence, I ain't worrying about nothing.
Amen.
If something happened to me in that moment, I know you're going to take care of her as if she was yours. If I ain't got that level of trust or confidence, then you can't get in the circle.
That's so good, man. Yeah, and I think men need that level of integrity and connection. You know, you want to be around men, not only like-minded men, but men that you can trust. And you can trust not only with your life, but with the life of those that you love the most. So good, brother. Real good. Here we go. Let me go here.
Yes, sir.
I know we short on time. I'm probably over a little bit, but I want to know how you serving in corporate America, man. What's some of the work that you're doing? How you impacting lives there? How are you helping organizations in this change management of what you do, brother?
Yeah, so I have been very fortunate, and that's a mind shift, because originally when I went to college, I wanted to play basketball, go overseas, make a bunch of money, and go be an entrepreneur. God had other plans. And so I've been very fortunate enough to be in corporate spaces as an individual contributor and now as a leader for the last, you know, probably last decade. What I've been able to do specifically in the pharmaceutical industry is one of the things I care a lot about is being able to help lead through white space, leveraging the ability to be strategic to help us get to where we need to get to, and also develop culture by being able to connect and grab history with people quickly. And so what I've been able to do over that time period is to, and literally got a phone call, actually got two phone calls in the last 2 days by two people that used to work for me, and they just had a different experience with some other leaders, and they just reached out to say thank you. Like, I appreciate you being who you were as a leader, and gave some very specific examples. And so any of the leadership teams that I'm on, any of the work stream or committees that I'm on, I'm usually that dude that's going to help us create the culture that the people can thrive in. And then being able to have a framework where we can talk about, if things are changing, how do we take them from where we are to ultimately where we want to go? And so that's one of the things that change management talks about, is change management is different from project management. Project management is about timelines, KPIs, KPIs and getting the job done. Organizational change management is about the change of human behavior. And so how do we get somebody to go from where they need to be, from where they are, to ultimately where they need to be and not get lost in that gap or that transition space? And a lot of times, if you look at people's cultures, whether it's church, corporate America, shoot, it could even be your family. It's usually a space where there's a disconnect or people get lost in that transition from what they know to where they need to go. And so organizational change management teaches kind of the framework, the communication style, the coaching style to be able to talk that from to story. And not to lose people along the way.
I know you do some personal coaching. How are you helping individuals in that lane as far as personal coaching? I know you got some great things going on too, man, to include the book Built for This. Yeah. Share with people about a little bit about your coaching program, the book, and how they can learn more about what you do, my friend.
Yeah. So for me, I feel like God created me to help people get their it. And the it for everybody is different. And there's a bunch of different things that could be surrounding you, trauma, life experiences that keep you from being able to see or to clearly understand what it is. And so one of the things that through my company, Level 3, is that we have our framework called Locate, Leverage, and Launch. So the first step is we're going to help you locate whatever it is. It could be a pain that's keeping you from getting over this hump. It could be a passion that you actually want to do something more with, but we got to help you locate it. And so that's where things like the flight assessment helps, because it starts with self-awareness. And I always say, you cannot self-regulate what you're not aware of. You know, when you think about organizational change management, the first step in organizational change management is awareness. So then if awareness is the first step, how many tools and things can we create, use, leverage to help the individual become more aware? So that's locate. Once we understand what we're dealing with, the fight that we're fighting, now we can leverage that insight or that information. Whether it's our passion, whether it's our talents, our gifts, whether it's a trauma, whether it's an opportunity for improvement, we can then leverage that into a customized plan that then allows for us to be able to launch or take the next steps into the direction of transformation for sustainable change. And so that's what kind of the thought process about the book Built for This was last year when I released it in March on Amazon. And it was a bestseller in about 7 categories for new release and number 1 bestseller in 3 different overall categories. And it really was about being able to do, I think, a couple of things that people don't do well, which is self-reflection, because they don't see self-reflection as a key component of self-care. And so Built for This, I took some quotes that in my personal time, I do a lot of journaling, I do a lot of writing, and probably over about a 2-3 year time period, I just had these random quotes that I was getting in my prayer time and journaling time, and I compiled them, you know, came up with the top 30. And then from those 30 quotes, and I started breaking down the information a little bit more from that quote. What does that quote mean? So you got the quote, then kind of what it means. And then there's 2 to 3 questions underneath each one of those days, because I broke it out into 30 days, for people to actually start working a little bit more through the reflection, understanding. And I just believe, and I've heard people say it, if you invest in yourself 30 minutes for 30 days, you will be able to see that you're a different person. You'll see yourself differently and will understand why this time in your life is different than any other time before. So that was Built for This. And so following up off of Built for This, and that actually honestly came out of an Instagram live that I do still consistently. I've been doing it for 2.5 years now. I've been doing it consistently every Wednesday and Friday mornings at 7 a.m. Eastern on Instagram live. The handle is Ask Aaron Victor. And we call it Get Over the Hump. And it really is bringing leaders, entrepreneurs, influencers, professionals together, where we create a fresh perspective on whatever we're navigating with through the idea and the topic that I'll throw out to help us get to the other side of whatever's keeping us from where we need to be. I personally believe that the joy of doing that every Wednesday and Friday isn't me. It's actually the chat, because the encouragement that that group puts in the chat is absolutely phenomenal. The things that they actually help me with, you know, and I love when Paul talks about in the scriptures where he was writing one of the letters where he says, I long to be with you, paraphrase, because I know I'm going to be better put up in your presence. And so that's what Wednesday and Fridays have become for me, 7 a.m. Eastern on Instagram Live. And then 2 things that we shifted this year is, one, knowing that everybody's not getting up, or people have told me, Aaron, you're part of my morning. Like I get pictures where people show me their grandkids are watching me, which is weird and funny and humbling all at the same time. But because they're in their morning routine at 7 a.m., they're driving to work, they're getting dressed, that sometimes they don't have a chance to take the notes and be reminded and go back and reflect. And so every Monday at 8 a.m. Eastern, I release a newsletter that's basically about 2 to 4 minute read. That's basically just a build off of the principles we talked about on the lives, that if you can't get up or you want to have it as a reminder in your reflection time, you get that. That's the feedback from that. I launched that this year. It's been phenomenal. It's been super, super fun. And then you go coming out of the group, we get over the hump. A couple of things that transpire from there too is that now I'm doing like a once a month kind of free webinar kind of conversation. We're calling the golden hour, and it's meant to just be there for an hour, but it's a play off of the golden hour and its impact. The impact that the golden hour has is that you get it twice a day, where that's the dawning of a new day and the setting of an old one. And then the photographers talk about the beauty and the clarity of the colors in that moment, that they don't need anything artificial. It's beautiful. Then you look at that from an obstetrics and gynecology perspective, is that they say the critical hour or the golden hour for mothers to connect with their baby is the first 60 minutes they're born. And so we take all of that into account to say that this is beautiful. This is the setting or the dawning of a new day. And guess what? This is a critical moment for you to move forward. And we go 1 hour, talk about things a little bit differently than we do in the morning, and we go and get out of there. And then out of all of this, doing all this stuff, people have been asking me, hey, when are you doing your conference? When are you doing an event? When are you doing this? When are you doing that? So come October the 4th and the 5th, we're going to do first live event. First live event is going to be in Washington, D.C. We're calling it VROS. And VROS, our theme is going to be live and leave a dream. And so we pulled that from the ancient Greek times, where they talked about the heroes and how the heroes were inspiration to those around them, but they also made sacrifices because they were focused on leaving the world better than what they found it. So that's October the 4th and the 5th. We are looking forward to people coming. I'm excited. But yeah, that's just kind of the stuff I've been working on.
Man, this is so good. Amazing. Congratulations to all the great work you're doing. Man, you mentioned so many phenomenal things, especially the golden hour. The golden hour. Phenomenal. I got to admit, though, I want to shout you out on this book, Built for This. I've been using your book because I work with formerly incarcerated community and motivation, sending them out the text, encouraging them with it. And not only that, we come together, right? And we sit down and we talk about them quotes, man, and we unpack them questions. And these guys, man, these guys are really, they love it. They're growing. They're gaining clarity. They're starting to see some things different, bro. We like about two and a half weeks in here now, right now. And they are loving it. So I definitely want to shout you out on that.
Oh, man, that's great news.
But I do have this question.
Yes, sir.
The event, October 4th, VROS, what's that mean? Is that a meaning behind that name?
Yeah, so VROS is VROS. From the ancient Greek times, and its direct translation means hero.
It does mean hero.
It does. Okay, direct translation means hero. And so when doing kind of the research and figuring out, one of the things that I started understanding when working with this branding team, and they said, Aaron, what do you do? And so what I endeavor to do until I stop breathing is to help the everyday person understand that just because you stop dreaming doesn't mean that you don't have a dream. And so what happens is that because people have thrown dirt on the dream, trauma has clouded the dream, cracked the lenses and everything else, people just don't believe that greatness is for them. And so what I want them to be able to understand is, like, let's be self-aware, let's dust that off. And first of all, you are a hero. What do heroes do? They inspire people around them. And why are you a hero? Because you got victories that you actually discount. I think that's day number 14 in the book, which is one of my favorite quotes. Normalized greatness creates undervalued experiences. And so what happens, a lot of us are so close to what we do, we can't see ourselves. So we discount what it is that we do. And my job is to say, nope, that's a big deal right there. So now you go from thinking you're just regular to now being a hero. So what's my qualifications for being a hero? I got victories. I'm a victor. And now when we believe that we are a victor and we are victorious, we then can transform ourselves into being a guardian. Why is a guardian important? Because guardians protect what they value. Guardians will steward what is of value. And so if I can walk somebody through that particular process, which people have, you know, testified and said, I've done that for them. Why not create an event that brings the heroes, the victors, the guardians together under one roof to be reminded of who they are and to go back on fire again to leave the world a better place?
Man, listen, I can't wait to hear more about the event taking place October 4th, VROS. Hope I said that right. Listen, gentlemen, get hold of the newsletter. Go find out what Aaron is up too. He's got some phenomenal things in the paint. He's making big noise. He's scoring big. He is showing up as the hero. Aaron, man, listen, lastly, let the people know where they can follow you, your social media profiles, where they can follow you. And your webpage, please.
Yeah. So here's where easiest way to follow me is Ask Aaron Victor, because people usually screw my last name up. I pulled it out, my social media handle. It's Ask Aaron Victor. So it's my first name, middle name with A-S-K in front of it. If you do that on Instagram, you can find me there. If you click the link in the bio, you can sign up for the newsletter. You can join the wait list and you can turn your notifications on if you want to be part of Get Over the Hump on Wednesday and Friday mornings at 7 a.m. Eastern. So that's the easiest way to get locked in right away is to, if you're on Instagram, if you got a kid that's on Instagram, whatever you need to do, go at Ask Aaron Victor. You'll see me. This dude's face is there. And click the link in my bio. It has everything right there for you.
Now, my last question for you.
Yes,
when
sir.
Is the new book being released, my friend? What's
so
the name of the new book?
So the new book. Coming? Yeah, this is good. So the new book is actually going to be released that weekend. October the 4th, it's going to be released. So the event is going to be one part book release, one part conference, one part party. So we're going to have a good time. And so it is going to be released that weekend. Currently, right now, I think the Lord is done messing with me. I'm done messing with him. I don't know which one it is, but this thing has definitely turned over a few times based on what I thought I was going to write. But I'm actually going to name it the name of the conference. It's going to be V-Ross, Live and Leave a Dream. So,
good stuff. My friend, I want to say thank you for taking time and rocking with us. Thank you for your time, being gracious with us, pouring in to us, man. So much value that men can really take away from. Fellas, never miss an opportunity to grow yourself, man. Connect with us regularly on the Leadership Podcast. We upped our ante, though. We went from one podcast a week to dropping two podcasts a week. So we got podcasts coming out on Tuesdays and Thursdays on Watch Form. If you haven't subscribed to the Leadership Podcast, please do so. Show your love. We truly appreciate it. In the comments, man, let them know. Let Aaron know what were some of your biggest takeaways. We truly appreciate it. As you always hear your voice say, realize this, that you have everything you need to take your life to the next level. That's simply because your success is in your hands. Fellas, have a phenomenal day with purpose. God bless.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Leadership Podcast with Dwayne Roberts. We hope you found inspiration and practical wisdom that will help you in your leadership journey. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform and leave us a review. We love to hear your feedback and suggestions for future episodes. Remember, true leadership begins with you. Leadership is not a position. Leadership is not a title. Leadership is having positive influence on others. Keep shifting, keep growing, keep leading with purpose. You can stay connected with Dwayne Roberts on all the social media platforms or by visiting our website, DwayneHRoberts.com. We want to say thank you. Remember, you have everything you need to make the leader's shift in your life. That's because your success is in your hands. Till next time, God bless you.